This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Noga. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive in to this week's episode.
Hello, hello, and welcome back to the Elevate Podcast. This is Sarah, and I'm joined by the beautiful Amanda Noga.
Hello.
How are you this week? What's been happening over in Bali, beautiful Bali?
As you were doing the intro, I was just looking at my desk in front of me, and I have like four or five different beverages lined up. I'm just a beverage fanaticist. I've always been like this. Even when I like think back to high school studying, I'd have like, so right now I've got my water, my coconut water, my chai, my jamu. Like, it's just ridiculous.
That's why anyway, you love Bali, because Bali is the place where you get like tonics and waters and coconut waters, and you drink them all at the same time, and it costs you peanuts.
It's true. Yeah, we have a constant stock in our fridge of like amazing moringa juice and yeah, all the fun tropical things. But what has been happening? Well, something I was kind of like reflecting on the last couple of weeks since we talked last was, so I was mentioning last week about this kind of realization about my inner rushing, my constant state of inner rushing. And then I got my period. And even though, and maybe this is like a topic that we can revisit on the podcast, because I know we did a whole episode on periods, like maybe the second or third episode that we ever did like 5 years ago.
A lifetime ago. Yeah. Yes.
But so I've been tracking my cycle for a really long time now. But I feel like now I'm really going into a deeper layer of understanding the womb and the wisdom that's there, and really like fully following the natural cycles and the cycles of nature, or Mother Nature as well, you know. So that all ties in with like this rushing is because I had kind of overridden that deep embodied understanding of natural time and the pace in which things, you know, like a seed comes into bloom. That takes a long time. It doesn't happen like overnight, and you can't just like pull all the petals out and like make it come into bloom. It's like it needs to slowly unfurl. So yeah, this period I really like had a penny drop, or like a deeper layer of that infinite onion peeling off, and kind of realizing how that affects my whole life. And I do think it has something to do with, I wonder if people can relate to this, but when you become a mum, and for, you know, a period of time, you don't have your own cycle. Like, you're on, obviously you're pregnant, so you don't have a period. And then for the months after, like I think I got mine, well, I know I got my period back on Sage's 7-month birthday to the day. And so for like almost, I guess, that period of 2 years, I didn't have a period. I didn't have my own inner cycle going on. Obviously there's like pregnancy in that big cycle that's happening, but I think for that reason, it's quite easy for us women to be, because we're so receptive and permeable, especially in that like pregnancy and postpartum time, it's easy to be like almost overwhelmed or like imposed by the culture and by like even the people that we're living with or the people that we're surrounding ourselves with. It's easy to fall into their timeline and their pace, which might not be our pace, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's what I've been going into, but a deeper love and a deeper honoring for the period. And I don't really know how to segue, but you were telling
me something
very... Oh, yeah, I've been sick. Everyone in Bali's been sick. Literally every single, like, foreigner friend that I know is sick, and all the local people that I know are sick. And when I speak to the locals, they're like, yep, my whole family's sick. Yep, my whole family's sick. Every village is fully sick. And the general consensus is that it's Omicron. I know a couple of people that have been tested and, you know, were positive for COVID, but I don't think they can isolate in the tests, and who knows how even accurate the PCR tests are, but that's another conversation. But the word on the street, quite literally, all the locals say, oh, yeah, it's Omicron, Omicron, Omicron. So
everyone's
all
just
had Omicron.
Oh, so you've all just had this new variant, and everyone's
well,
just getting on with
it. Interesting, because, I mean, yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if I should say this, but it's just a
just
fact,
say it.
So I can say it. All of the school children in Bali, and I assume all of Indonesia, just received their vaccines to go back to school. And school has pretty much been a non-event for the last 2 years here in Bali, which, as you can imagine as a parent, that's pretty full on, especially, yeah, just people, you know, really worried that their children have had 2 years of not being in school now, and they don't have the options necessarily of, like, doing Zoom school, or even learning from home is not really, it's not the same situation. Most locals that I know that have school age kids, they, you know, they maybe went to primary school. Most didn't go to high school. So it's just a different situation. So I have a hunch that it's kind of weird timing, considering that all of the school kids just got their vax and then everybody got sick. And I think it's because of the shedding.
I have to agree.
Obviously, no scientific data to back this up.
No.
But sort of just common sense. It's like, okay, all the school kids got their thing. They all got, you know, that little bit sick that you get from getting a vaccine. And it spreads like wildfire.
Yeah, everybody
but, yeah,
else
for the
got
most
sick.
Part, everyone's getting on with life. It's not. Mm. Yeah, it's. It's just, I guess, a fact of life. Everyone's got it. Everyone's had it now. Hopefully we can move on.
Not here.
What's the status update?
Well, I mean, let's not talk too much about COVID because it's just, at this stage, really stupid and boring. But we were just laughing offline about how WA, which has always been known as Wait a While, is also just, you know, perpetuating that mythology for itself by, you know, just waiting even longer for COVID.
So
funny.
It's like Perth is
oh
so
gosh.
Out of date.
Like we're literally just like just going to get COVID now. Like it's actually
just
going to
start
so
getting COVID
ridiculous.
Now, 2 years late.
It's actually Sorry. Ridiculous. And you know what's more ridiculous, and I think we've already spoken about this, is that the you know gross majority of the Perth and you know WA population have been triple vaccinated, and as you know our own Premier has pointed out, the efficacy of said vaccinations wane significantly after a pretty short period of time, like matter of like multiple months, like 2 to 3 months. So if people have had their booster for a couple of months, they're basically just a similar status, immune status, as the unvaccinated. I find it hilarious. Like we just had it for shits and giggles. Like we just all had it for fun because we didn't even have it. It's so ridiculous. Anyway, to talk to your shedding story,
My theory.
Your theory, which is no, I mean, it's not your, well, yes, this is your version of the theory, but obviously it's like a widely
recognized phenomenon, but my mum and I were just having a conversation and she was saying, I don't think it's really true, because she had been worried about it as well. Like, you know, she's a sensible, like, pro-vax person, but she, you know, had read about it and was concerned, because she said, you know, everyone would be sick. But what I will say is, you know, firstly, yes, you know, there are phenomenons like you have encountered where everybody is like strangely sick at the same time as the gross majority of people get vaccinated. But, you know, from a personal perspective, you know, I have now been in very close proximity with family members that have been vaccinated. And I can tell you that my period last month was hands down the worst period that I have ever had. And I think that that is one of the biggest side effects. And I know I have friends that are practitioners that are like masseuses and people that are in close contact with people that are vaccinated, and their cycles are extremely affected. And I can say, you know, I don't normally medicate for pain and discomfort. And I took over a 12-hour period, I was like, of the time that I was awake, I was medicating every couple of hours, you know, and I had to, because I had to work. I had a full day of clients, and that's just not my experience. I think one other time I had a period like that, right after my wedding. Obviously my wedding was a time of, you know, stress, and I'd lost quite a lot of weight and all of that, you know, but that was, I reckon that was like a 4-hour experience. This was like extended. It was so stark. And
I can't remember if we spoke about it on the podcast or if it was just something that I know I definitely spoke about it on Instagram, but maybe like a year ago, this whole idea of shedding and the way that it's disrupting and affecting women's menstrual cycles. Is really, like, when you start going into those stories, it's really full on. And, you know, even here, yeah, I'm sure we spoke about this on the podcast, but anyway, one of my really close local friends, she, after her whole family got vaccinated, she didn't stop bleeding for 6 weeks. And I even know, like, postmenopausal women who have had like breakthrough bleeding, and not just like spotting, like clots and like hemorrhage style bleeding. It's really full on.
are these people that are because I've heard those sorts of stories from people that have been vaccinated as well.
I have only heard, no, I guess I've heard both, but those that I just mentioned were people were not vaccinated, and they were just in close proximity to people that are.
Yes.
But yeah, I've even had friends now who, yeah, a particular friend, obviously I won't say who they are, but they are in the process of trying to get pregnant, and her husband has been vaccinated now, and she's been also having really painful periods, and she's very concerned about how the vaccinated sperm is going to be affecting her reproductive system.
I am extremely concerned for all of my fertility clients, because I'm seeing the impacts. I'm starting to see the impacts a little bit. I'm seeing some things, which I think we might have touched on, but I hadn't had the experiences that you had had, where I've seen a couple of early preterm births. I've seen more than I care to see with miscarriages than I would normally see. I'm seeing some trends, and
an interesting trend that I read about, which is kind of funny but also like slightly concerning, I guess, is the price of unvaccinated sperm in the US is going through the roof. You cannot get your hands on unvaxxed sperm.
Oh my god, Iggy, side hustle.
Oh my god. So yeah, we will see what unravels. I pray that it's not as bad as it sounds like it could be, but
yeah, we will have to wait and see.
And I guess that leads into our topic, because I think something that we can remember is there are, so today we're going to talk about cleansing, but just to kind of like tie it up in a bow of what we were just talking about, is there are some really practical ways that we can protect ourselves and even cleanse the vaccine, if you've had it, out of your system, or ways that you can support your system to effectively detox the vaccine. But that's not what we're specifically talking about, but I just want to like make the note that there are things we can do. So if you're interested in that, and if it's relevant for you, go and do some research or even send me a DM.
But can I just say before we move on, and then we will 100% move on, if you have had an mRNA vaccine and the spike protein, the body is now producing that spike protein, I am not 100% confident that there is anything that you can do to detox that. And time will tell. But, you know, like maybe you can take things which, yeah, if anyone wants to DM Mandy about that, she's got things. But, you know, maybe those things are more about reducing the inflammatory process that those spike proteins are creating in the body. I don't think you can actually detox those out. And that is the problem with this new technology, which isn't putting something in, it's actually creating, it's facilitating your body to create something. And we just didn't really understand, or maybe they did, I don't know. But, you know, it seems like the impact of that spike protein proliferation is much more significant than they anticipated. So sorry to put a little wet blanket on that, but I just think that needs to be said. You can't just detox this stuff if you've had the Pfizer.
Yeah. And some of the vaccines don't have that mRNA, but I don't know what's
true
in Australia. But anyway, boring. but you know, just the facts of our current situation on planet Earth.
That's right. So let's talk about cleansing. The reason that I wanted to discuss this today, and I wanted to discuss it last episode, but we talked about something way more fun, psychedelics.
I trump your cleansing card with psychedelics.
you did. But the reason that I wanted to talk about this is because I have a lot to say, and I think we're going to disagree on some things, but also because at this time of the year, so it's probably a little bit different in Bali, but in Perth and most of Australia, at the end of Australia Day really is like the full stop in the festive season. So it starts in December, everyone's got Christmas parties, and then obviously rolls right through December and into January, and everyone's still socializing, and there's holidays and school holidays and all of the things that just make us less healthy.
And because the summer.
And summer, it's awesome. So Australia Day, I think, you know, not in an overt way, but a lot of people seem to, that's when sort of school starts to go back, that is when the holidays are officially over for most people, you know, that's when January is coming to a close, and that is when most people go, oh my god, I have drunk nonstop for 2 months and eaten a whole bunch of shitty food that has made me feel rubbish and maybe put on a bit of weight, whatever it might be, and now I need to do something radical to pivot, to turn that ship around. And so it heralds the start of, and the one that I was just telling you about offline, Amanda, is Feb Fast. So it's just like a little bit like your dry July, but in February. But it's just that time of the year now where a lot of people are doing a cleanse, doing a juice cleanse, you know, doing some sort of fast, or doing, you know, the Feb fast. It's that time of the year where people are conscious of the toxification, and now they're trying to detox. And so I think that it's actually timely for us to talk about this, because, you know, I think whilst it's good to do these things, I think that there's, you know, there's ways to
be more sustainable about this sort of stuff in an ongoing capacity.
Now is maybe the time that I should tell you that
you're cleansing.
Day two of a cleanse.
Oh my God, of course you are. See, this is what I'm talking about. Okay, so you need to tell us what this entails, this crazy cleanse that you're doing. No, I'm sure it's not crazy. Tell us.
Okay, my love, it's Amanda here. And instead of telling you about my yoga and Ayurveda offerings as per usual, if you want to learn about what I'm currently offering, go to yogaalchemy.com.au and you can see if there's one-on-ones available, group mentoring, teacher training, and all that stuff. What I'm really here to tell you about today is Karma Collab. So many of you are already familiar with this project that I started about 7 years ago in support of women and girls in rural India and also now here in Bali. Karma Collab is entering, as we go into this new year, its next evolution, its next phase. And part of that is a brand new jewelry collection where all of the proceeds go to providing education for girls and also providing support for mothers through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. So it's something that I'm really excited about. And there's lots of other ways that we can join forces and really empower ourselves through the act of giving and receiving. So if you want to learn more about Karma Collab, join our mailing list, go to karmacollab.org. The link will be in the show notes, of course, and come and follow us on Instagram. So much love is poured into this project and I'm really excited to have you as part of our global network of women who support other women through real action and activism. Mwah.
Well, I would admit that my cleansing history is pretty maybe fraught with some extreme behavior. But, you know, this is, I guess, where we're going to disagree, because even though, of course, some of those cleanses were extreme and maybe, well, definitely not sustainable, I'm still glad that I did them. And a lot of them were ways to experiment, I guess, with my own lived experience. So, like, doing, you know, like, I think probably the one that is most like shocking is like a 40-day water fast.
Or I do not know done, how you did that. I just plenty I'm in awe of you.
Well, it doesn't need to be in awe, because I mean it's no like I don't know. I think like probably one of the biggest problems with cleansing is like putting them on that kind of pedestal. Like it can serve a purpose. And I wouldn't necessarily.
I don't mean in awe like that. I just mean like my mouth is wide open, just going, "How the fuck did you
shock
do that?"
Shock and awe.
Yes.
But I think in general, like culturally, that is kind of the position that we put. You know, we have like some kind of reverence or admiration for these extreme things. And like maybe even like probably not so much now, but maybe 10 years ago the idea of doing a juice cleanse was really radical, and like, oh, I could never do it. Like people would be like, I could never do that, like la 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 la. But now it's like everyone does it, you know.
Yeah.
So
tell us about your cleanse before we get stuck into our own experiences.
The cleanse that I'm doing now is very mild, I would say, very very gentle. It's basically
like a panchakarma.
No, it's the medical medium 369, which probably a lot of people know about or have at least heard about the medical medium. And it doesn't involve any fasting necessarily, or except for day 9, we do just juices. But thinking about it, it's probably very similar to how you eat day to day anyway.
Like me? It's,
yeah. So you do basically no gluten, no dairy, no sugar, no alcohol, no caffeine, no nothing really, except for protein and veggies. Very few grains. I think the only grains we have are oats and millet, and the rest are just veggies, and you can have protein, but I don't really eat protein. So, it's like no soy, no legumes, even you do no, for the first, well, I won't get into all the details, but basically it's reducing fats as well in a really big way. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing. And it's only 9 days. It's very, like, you still eat, you know, 3 meals a day, and you just add in these like kind of specific ingredients, including his trademark celery juice, of course. But I think,
are you making all of this stuff, or are you just getting, is there places that do celery juice over there and you can just order it?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah, we have got some delivered, and then we've actually just ordered a juicer, so that's coming. But so we'll do both.
Okay.
But I didn't. This is so boring. I didn't want to buy a juicer, but blah 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 blah.
Yeah. Okay. That, I mean, I don't, just for a bit of context, I do definitely do not eat like that. Like, I eat grains most days. I drink alcohol.
But you eat gluten-free grains.
I do, yes, but I have, what else was there? I have sugar, a little bit of sugar, like healthy sugar. I have like honey. I feel like I have probably the odd legume. I don't know. I feel like I don't eat like that. Apart from
but
I
eat, you're like, pretty clean.
I don't think I'm that clean. But anyway, maybe.
I think you are. Your day-to-day diet is really healthy, I would say. Like, you don't have any of the dirty dozen or whatever their stupid name's called, like gluten, dairy. You have very minimal caffeine now. You have minimal alcohol.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and, you know, I'll expand on this later, but that's sort of the point, is maybe just trying to eat and drink a little bit more like that, and then you don't have to cleanse. And I know that you do, but, you know.
But I, on a day-to-day basis here in my current lifestyle, I do eat gluten and dairy and sugar and all those things. And I will put a caveat here, because living with my husband, Mark Laws, it's impossible to avoid these foods when you live with this guy, because he's ordering fucking French fries for breakfast.
What?
Like, cookies every day, cinnamon rolls every day. It's like our house is, there's always cakes here. It's nonstop. So, you know, living with that, it's sort of just, it's part of the, it's part of the furniture to have, you know, all of these crazy foods around. And of course, I could go like, I'm not eating any of that, whatever. Because the truth is, it doesn't make me feel the best when I'm eating those foods, and I can definitely feel the difference.
Mm.
But I've also loosened up my approach to food so much compared to how it used to be. Maybe, you know, in my early 20s, I was so fanatical about food, and now I'm just sort of a bit more relaxed about the whole thing,
which and is, I guess, great. That's,
yeah
and I feel like that's me too, which is why I think maybe you think I eat healthier than I do, because I have dairy most days, I have a shitload of honey in my hot chocolate every morning, like I have grains 2 to 3 times a day, like gluten-free grains, but grains, like I'm not just like meat and veg. I wish I was. Maybe I'd be a tiny bit healthier, but I'm a bit more moderate as well, because I think, I don't know if when it happened for you, but definitely having Raph was like the moderating force, dietary force in my life, because, you know, I had to eat a bit more versatile foods, like while I was pregnant and then breastfeeding, mm-hmm. and I needed more, and that sort of shifted the way that I looked towards food, and then it was sort of, yeah, just sort of done, you know.
But coming Definitely. Back to cleansing, so a bit like you, I haven't done a 40-day water fast, but I have done a lot of cleanses over the years. So, like, did you ever hear of like Dr. Joshi's? He was like Gwyneth Paltrow's like first guru. His book has been pulled. I don't know what it was about his book that was controversial, but his book's been pulled. But it was called Dr. Joshi's Detox. And I used to do that like all the time. And it was pretty basic. Like you still were eating, but it was like none of those things. Obviously no alcohol, no caffeine. So that sort of stuff. I did quite a few juice fasts, like, you know, 4 or 5 day juice fasts. So like you, yes. And I definitely found that for me, the cleansing would be sort of a crutch that I would lean on if I had either been like super neglectful in a way, like whether it was like drinking way too much, eating lots of rubbish or both, but it was also like something that I would use like an extreme diet to lose weight or like a juice.
Right. So I was thinking about it. I was like, is cleansing just our version of like the 90s
yes.
cabbage soup diet and
yes.
Atkins diet and all of those?
Yes.
We've just rebranded it and made it more palatable for our 2020.
Yeah. And even, you know, I would say like for, you know, in the 20s, we have, you know, sorry, in like 2015, 16, 17, 18, cleansing for a while has been a nice little smokescreen for exactly, I'm doing the cabbage soup diet. That's what I think is happening. And, I mean, I see a lot of women that want to lose weight or have been trying to lose weight, and most of them will – the first thing they'll do now because they're scrolling Instagram and they're looking at, you know, they're being fed images around, you know, what they should be doing, is the first thing they'll go to is I'm going to do one of those cleanses.
So why is cleansing so bad if you want to lose weight?
So, well, there's a couple of reasons. I think if you're doing like a water fast or a juice fast, something like that, let's say, like less
like a deprivation style.
Yeah. Well, we know why that's bad for us. You know, like we're putting the body into a state of stress. Most of us are probably already stressed, so we shouldn't even be doing that. We're creating that metabolic derangement where as soon as we start to eat normally, our body's just going to like suck up all that food and store it. You know, all of that stuff. You're not actually losing weight in that process. You're just creating more imbalance in your body and more metabolic derangement in your body. So I think
metabolic derangement is such a like horrible term.
Oh my god, but it's true. Like you're throwing your body.
It's like I'm just imagining like all these little cells like deranged walking around your body like what do I do? I don't know how to function.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what's happening. So I think that it's, you know, it's an additional stressor to the body. It's a deprivation diet that will just slow metabolic function down. So that is problematic. And it's also just, it's creating these habits around like cleansing and then just maybe eating normally for a while and then cleansing again, which is like the diet, eat normally, diet, eat normally, diet. Seesaw, right? It's mm-hmm. not what my issue with it is, and this is, you know, through working with many, many women, is that it doesn't work for weight loss. Like when we can talk about what it works for, because you have a lot more experience in that, but it doesn't really work for weight loss. Maybe you feel a bit lighter, maybe you feel a bit better. As soon as you start eating normally, depending on what you're eating, a lot of that stuff is going to go away. It doesn't change anything really. It doesn't change your behaviors. It doesn't create new habits, even though sometimes that's the intention, is I'll start with a cleanse and then I'll, you know, just maintain that weight loss and just stay healthy. That doesn't happen, you know. So it's not, I just think, like I said, in relation to me, there's things that you can do daily and weekly and monthly and consistently that are going to facilitate those same processes and keep you healthier and not create that stress for your body.
Can you talk about the way that we hold, I think this is really interesting and I've heard you talk about it before, the way that we hold, or particularly women, hold weight in the body due to stress, like different parts of the body I've heard you talk about before.
Well, when we are stressed, when the female body or any body is stressed, I mean, obviously it can get to the point where it's like really, really thin. So it's not just a broad sweeping statement. But typically, probably the best way to explain it is when we're stressed, we produce glucose. The body produces glucose, releases glucose. Why? Because any stress is a threat, and that threat is a predator. So as soon as your body perceives threat, it's going to dump glucose into the bloodstream to send that glucose out to fuel your musculoskeletal system so you can run away from said predator. So if you are not using that, you're going to just have all this excess sugar that will ultimately be stored as fat. So literally that's, you know, what a high stress in any context, not even in cleansing, like that's what a high stress environment will do to a woman. And where it tends to accumulate is around the midsection of a woman, but not even just always there. So anything that any deprivation of food is going to trigger a stress. So, you know, your body is basically trying to read your external environment and perceive what sort of threats are imminent, right? And the major threats are predator or lack of food. Yeah. And if there's like a food, it's sort of the same thing. It needs to keep you alive, right? So that's why stress in any form is going to potentially encourage weight gain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And I don't have this as a fully formed thought, and I wish I did, but I think cleansing becomes unhelpful depending on our relationship to food and our relationship to our body.
I 100% agree with you. That is my point. I think, you know, I can see why, you know, I can see the validity in a Panchakarma, you know, but as an example, I have a client right now that's been to a really well-known Ayurvedic lady here in WA, who I'm sure you know, and obviously I know her, and she does it really, you know, like proper Panchakarmas, and she's done like 6 Panchakarmas with this lady, with the whole lot, like all of the treatments and everything, which is a major effort and very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she did the Panchakarma, which she did for weight loss, she lost weight and she felt amazing, and literally like 1 week back to normal life and everything was back to normal. Like, you know, maybe not that quickly, but she said there was nothing at all that penetrated in and was able to be continued into. So the weight came back on. You know, the diet just went back to normal. You're not going to eat a kitchery 3 times a day in your normal life. Like there was the only benefit was the benefit that she got while she was doing that $3,000 Panchakarma, you know. So, and I do think that a Panchakarma, which is, you know, we've talked about it before on the pod, but that's a much more gentle type of cleanse than, you know, some of the juice cleanses and things that people are doing now that they're buying. You know, and buying off Instagram and just getting like 3 juices a day for 7 days.
If you want to hear more about Panchakarma in detail, go back to the fasting episode that we did a few months ago. And I talk about my most recent Panchakarma experience. But yeah, I agree. And what is coming to mind is if we're not changing our relationship to food, I'm really looking at like, why are we reaching for the alcohol, the sugar, the gluten, whatever our, you know, crutch might be. If there's underlying issues there that are the reason why we're reaching for those foods to make us feel better or to make us feel different to how we feel, then of course they're going to just come back as soon as we finish the cleanse, because we haven't done that deeper work to excavate those patterns.
Yes, 1,000,000%.
So, but I'm really all for a cleanse personally. Yes, as you know.
I was about to ask you, so what is the intention of this cleanse? Like, what is it that, apart from your husband feeding you cookies and pastries nonstop, what is it that you need to get out of this that you couldn't get in another way? I'm curious.
Hello, it's Sarah here, and I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different. So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
Well, I guess it was kind of funny even leading up to the cleanse, because Mark and I doing it together. It was his idea. He brought the pitch to me, and I was happy to do it. But leading up, we had totally different approaches. We've never done a cleanse or anything together before. We had totally different mindsets going into it. So the days before starting the cleanse, he was like, where should we eat? Like, what's our last meal's gonna be? Like, yes. Oh, like he ordered so much crazy food. Like, he went extreme, like into kind of the worst. Like,
this is exactly what happens.
Freaking milkshake and a fries and
yes,
like every, you know, just going full out.
Binging.
Yeah, binging in like preparation for this perceived deprivation that was going to happen, right? But in my mind, it's like barely even a deprivation. It's like just kind of a nice reset. And my mindset going in was like, okay, the days leading up, I kind of just want to eat like more gently and start to pare back on like caffeine and even like, you know, just like kind of using up the food that we have to like get it out of the house, if you know what I mean. Like just, yeah, just like paring back and like not bringing in new things that my body's going to have to deal with when we start this cleanse, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So I guess like even within this household, we have two examples of how you can approach a cleanse. And totally. I guess like I can look forward and I know as soon as we finish the cleanse, Mark's going to go back. And this isn't to rag on Mark. I don't care.
No.
Whatever he wants to eat. I mean, who knows what he's doing to his organs, but he looks fine. So I know as soon as we finish the cleanse, he's going to go back to eating his French fries and cinnamon rolls for sure. But for me, it's an opportunity to reset, to not only reset my food, but just kind of, I know that by resetting my food, it's an opportunity to also kind of like rejig all my other routines and ways that I've been doing things. And for me, February does feel like the start of the year. I don't know. January is always a write-off. I don't, it's just, I feel like we need that kind of limbo space in between the years changing before I can make like a really good start again. So February feels like that good start time. And I don't have like a bad feeling about cleansing. And I know afterwards I probably will like incorporate those foods back in. I'm not going to be like really strict about, no, I'm not eating gluten, or, but I know in myself actually that I won't feel like those foods at all. I won't be drawn to them. And I guess it's also like down to how I would say like our constitutions. I don't have that addictive constitution mm-hmm. in me. And so food for me, it feels very much just like a fuel, and I'm happy to eat for function. I'm not really, of course, like food is pleasurable and that's nice. And especially like in a social setting, like, of course, that's how we bond and create those connections with our friends and family. But on a day-to-day basis, I'm really happy just to eat oatmeal and khichdi. Like when you said that you're not going to eat khichdi three times a day, I'm like, I would happily do that.
I think so, I would actually too. That, I mean, and that sounds pretty delicious. But yes, I think you're right. It does come down to how you're going to, what the intention is with the cleanse. And I think for the most part, most people's intention is a little bit more like Mark's, you know, and that's why yeah. I knew that this would be a good conversation, because you have that perspective to be able to use it in a way that is more mindful than I think the vast majority of humans right now that are, you know, cleansing. And I do see that like ramping of sort of binging behavior and desperation in the days prior to the cleanse, and then again in the days after. Like it's straight after, like,
yeah, like,
with the friends that I do mean, like
how are we going to break the cleanse? I'm like, yes. I don't care.
No, that's exactly what happens. Like I know a lot of my friends will do like these cleanses, and they're exactly like Mark. Like they're like the Last Supper. They're just eating everything that's just in their face. And then at the end, they're like, where are we going? We're going to go to like Big Rig's Burgers and eat three burgers. And just that defeats the purpose. That is not, because what that's actually doing as well from a sort of at a psychological level is actually encouraging and perpetuating the behaviors that you're in a way trying to modify. Because, you know, like the worst thing you can do is binge in whatever context that looks like, alcohol, sweet food, even healthy food. Like that's the worst thing you can do. And if you know that there's times of the year where you're cleansing, then you're always going to be, if you have that personality type, and I see that a lot, then you're always going to be binging on the shoulders of those times.
Mm.
So to me, that's just like, it's not a behavior change and it's not particularly healthy.
Yeah, because in a way you're applying that same binging set to even the deprivation part. It's the same
definitely pattern
psychologically.
Yeah, and it's actually like.
And it's also getting into this pattern of like always looking to the next thing.
Yeah, but it's almost like it's a crutch. Like I see people will be like, well, I know that FebFast is coming up, so I'm just going to go hell for leather over the next couple of weekends and really like push the boat out and drink a lot because I've got that whole month off in February. And then at the end of that month, it's like, woohoo, and they go crazy again. So, you know, the only cleanse that I...
It's an interesting mindset. I'm having a hard time trying to like wrap my head around it.
It's because you're not like that. It's hard for you to think like that. And I'm not really like that either.
I just think like, oh, it's going to make it so much harder for your poor little liver to do some good work during the cleanse. Like, why not set the liver up for a good start?
I know. Yeah. I know. The only cleanse that I think is a worthwhile cleanse, which is sort of going to contradict what I've just said, but is having an extended break from alcohol, which I don't think is a cleanse per se. But, you know, if I have female clients that are trying to lose weight and they might be drinking like 2 to 4 times a week, whether that's, you know, small amounts or large amounts, a couple of binges on the weekend, whatever it might be,
But if they're really struggling to lose weight and everything else, they're doing everything else more consistently and pretty well, I'll suggest that they take an extended period of time off alcohol. And typically, not always, but typically you'll see that things start to change, their body, their physiology starts to change. So that's the one that I think can be beneficial, but that's not extreme. Like, that's not super difficult, and there aren't really any downsides to doing that. You know, that's not deprivation, that's not going to upset any system in the body, you know.
No, but I feel like you could apply that same rule of thumb to caffeine,
yes,
gluten, dairy.
All of those things should be out.
If you
anyway,
were to cut out any of those. But if you're not going to do a cleanse, but if you're just going to drop one thing out, I reckon dropping coffee, let's say, that's also probably going to help someone lose weight pretty quickly, because first of all, your stress levels are going to drop, so you're not going to be holding that cortisol weight around the tummy as much. You're also not going to be, most people drink milk, some kind of milk, even if it's a nut milk. That's a lot of calories, right?
And seed combined oils. With
the, right, that's the big one. That was like number one on the list for medical medium is obviously no seed oils, but so like they're everywhere. You have to be so on it with seed oils.
I know.
It's cruel.
They're my number one thing. I take them out of everyone's diet straight away. I mean, you know, means that.
I think we are quite lucky in Bali because everything is freshly made. But
are they cooking in seed oils?
Not at the places that we eat. In the local places, well, yeah, some local places will use like the canola oil or vegetable oil or some other thing they called salad oil, which who knows what that is. But like the proper local places and anywhere local that we eat, they just use coconut oil. Like,
that's amazing.
Abundant, you know, just makes sense.
Yeah, that's right. No, there is nowhere here that cooks with anything other than canola, pretty much.
There's some places here you can choose which fat you want. So you can have coconut oil, ghee, butter, whatever.
That
like
is
you choose.
So good. Perth is like, wait a while. So we're going to have to wait 20 years for that to happen.
Well, I'm sure we've spoken about seed oils and pod before, but I know you've spoken about it on your Instagram as well. But they're one of the hardest things for the body to cleanse.
Yes. Now, there is one other thing that, you know, while we're talking about, I suppose, you know, cleansing and detoxing, I suppose, you know, a lot of people don't know that our fat cells don't proliferate, we don't grow fat cells when we gain weight. It's that the fat cells expand capacity, right? And typically all mammals store their toxins in the fat. So, you know, the more toxic, this is I suppose a little mini argument for some sort of detoxification, but I think there's better ways to do it. But the more toxic the body is, the larger those fat cells are, and hence the fatter that person will be. But if you do crazy cleansing, on the flip side of that, if you do crazy cleansing or dramatic cleansing, like a bone broth fast or a water fast, you can detox really quickly as well, because all the toxins are coming out. So that's why obviously you can sort of have reactions to that, because your body has to try and get rid of all of those toxins that are escaping as those fat cells are shrinking, so to speak, if that makes sense. So, you know, I think having an infrared sauna every week is a way to sort of, you know, help the body detoxify. Abhyanga, you know, dry brushing,
yoga,
you know, those sorts of things done regularly in conjunction with other dietary interventions is going to help your body to detoxify in a way that is not going to have some shocking impact on your body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I remember when I was teaching yoga a lot, and on Mondays you could literally smell the alcohol seeping out of people's skin.
Pores. Yeah.
I could like smell the difference between people that drank alcohol, if they eat meat, like the sweat smells really different.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah, because it's those toxins are like escaping. Well, that's a sign that the yoga is detoxifying, which obviously
you definitely.
Yeah.
Here's my my every episode plug for doing yoga.
So we are actually rounding into the hour, so we should probably start to wrap. Do you have a recommendation?
The only cleanse that I would recommend, and literally everyone could and should do it, is just doing a Khichdi cleanse, which means
you've recommended that before,
of course.
To me,
but
sorry.
Basically, it just involves eating khichdi 3 times a day.
Do you want to explain what khichdi is?
At least 3 days. Khichdi is a very gentle, nourishing kind of soupy dal made with gentle spices, yellow mung beans, rice, and like maybe some seasonal veggies. So it's a nice way to both give your digestive system a break because it's so easy to digest, while not depriving yourself of any of the nutrients that you need to, you know, get through your day. But yeah, it's like that little reset so that your digestive system can do its work, getting rid of all the other shit that you've eaten.
What about like CCFT in conjunction with that?
Yeah, so generally what we always recommend to have CCFT, which is cumin, coriander and fennel seeds brewed as a tea, and you drink like at least a litre of that throughout the day, just sipping on it at, you know, warmish temperature. And if you're going to do a khichdi cleanse, do it for at least 3 days.
I remember one time when I was feeling like, oh, I put on a bit of weight, I feel a bit stagnant, I feel a bit yucky, you suggested the CCFT to me and I did it for I don't know how long, but I feel like it did something. It like wrapped up my metabolic function a little bit or something. It did something.
Absolutely. It's like such a winning combination, those seeds.
Spices, yeah.
So that's my only recommendation, really.
Okay, so my recommendation is it's a food as medicine that I also recommend to all of my clients. I don't think I've ever told you about this one. So so it's called the raw carrot salad. And basically there's this guy that's like this old school researcher that has, I suppose, there's a whole fringe, you know, like all the paleo, carnivore, keto, there's a little world called the metabolic world. That's what they call them. The people that are in there, and they're all into like thyroid function, but they're into lots of random stuff that I'm not necessarily into. Like they love juice, orange juice. They love, they actually love sugar. Yeah, they're a little bit more out there than I am. But the guy who's sort of, he's the forefather of the movement, his name is Ray Pete, and he discovered that carrot, when it's grated or ribbon, the fibers in it are really good at clearing away toxins from the large intestine, and particularly like estrogens, like endotoxins, like estrogen. And so the recipe/recommended, like, you know, dose is like a medium carrot. I normally peel it and grate it because it's faster. And then a teaspoon of oil, which you can have coconut oil or olive oil, and a teaspoon of vinegar. I think the best vinegar to have is white wine. They don't recommend to have apple cider vinegar because of the mother in there. It can be harder to digest, but I do sometimes have that. And then you just season it and you eat it every single day. And I will say that since I've been eating that, my digestion is perfect. Like my poo is like 100% spot on perfect every single day. And I've recommended it to so many clients and they all also say the same. So that's a little
amazing.
That's a little cleansing. Yeah, it's amazing. And that's like a little, that's clearing toxins every day and helping with gut function, which obviously we didn't talk about, but is, you know, if your gut's not working properly, then you can cleanse all you like, but if the detox pathways aren't working,
yeah, we spoke about that a lot on fasting, I think. You know, this is actually really similar to a very common Ayurvedic recipe, which is also the grated carrot. So I was really interested to hear
about that. Wow. Yeah,
and you do shredded coconut with it as well and cumin seeds and then, yes, the oil and vinegar.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's probably adapted from that. He probably found some Ayurvedic recipe and, yeah, in experimenting.
Everything comes from Ayurveda and yoga. Moral of the podcast.
And I think that is a wrap.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.